I do remember my faults today. Thus tradition makes him begin his speech. We know the words. They still echo today in our ears. But the chief butler meant not faults which he had not committed, for he had once come unjustly into prison, and had not shared in the plot to have the aged Ray bitten by Esset's serpent. He meant a different fault, namely, that he had explicitly promised somebody to mention him, but had not kept his word, for that he had forgotten the somebody. Now he thought of him, and he spoke of him before the baldachin. He reminded Pharaoh, who scarcely remembered it himself, of the ennui, for so he put it, with a deprecating foreign word, he had had at one time 2 years before, under King Nebmare, when there had been a mistake in identity, and he, together with another man, whom it were better not to name, an accursed of God, whose soul had been destroyed with his body, had been sent to Zawi Re, the island fortress. There, a youth had been assigned to him as steward, a Kabirite from Asia, the captain's aide, with the fantastic name of Osarsif, son of a shepherd king and friend of God in the East, born of a beautiful woman, as one could tell just by looking at him. This youth, then, had the greatest gift in the field of dream exegesis which he, excellent in Thebes, had ever seen in all the days of his life. For they had both dreamed, his guilty fellow prisoner and himself the innocent one, very weighty, portentous dreams, each his own dream, and been extremely embarrassed for their true meaning. Then this Usarsif, without making much of his talent beforehand, had interpreted their dreams quite easily and offhand, and announced to the baker that he would come to the gibbet, but to himself that on account of his utter innocence he would be taken back again into favor and put back into his office. And exactly so it had come to pass. And today he, Nefer, was mindful of his fault, namely that he had not long before called attention to and pointed out this talent that existed under a cloud. He did not hesitate to express the conviction that if anyone were able to interpret Pharaoh's important dreams, it was this youth, presumably still vegetating in Zawi Re. There was a stir among the friends of the king. Something stirred also in Mene's face and form. A few more questions and answers, quickly exchanged between him and the fat man, and then the high command went forth. The first and swiftest messenger was straightway to hasten by flight of boat to Zawi Re, and with the minimum of delay to fetch back the soothsaying youth to On before Pharaoh's countenance. Chapter 3. The Cretan Loggia. The Presentation. When Joseph arrived in the city of the blinking, thousands of years old On, it was once more seed time, time of the burial of the god, as it had been when he came for the second time to the pit and lay in it 3 great days under tolerable conditions, thanks to my Sakme, the even-tempered captain. Everything fitted in. Precisely 3 years had passed. They were at the same point in the circle, the week of the 22nd to the last day of Choyak, and the children of Egypt had just celebrated once more the feast of the harrowing and the setting up of the sacred backbone. Joseph was glad to see Golden On again. As a lad, 3 and 10 years before, he had passed through it with the Ishmaelites on the way whither they led him, and they had all got themselves instructed by the servants of the sun in the beautiful figure of the triangle and the mild nature of Re Horakhte, lord of the wide horizon. Once more his way led through the wedge-shaped city of instruction with its many glittering sun monuments. At the messenger's side, he went toward the top of it and the great obelisk at its apex, where the two sides cut each other. Its golden, all-out-glittering peak and cap had already greeted them from afar. Jacob's son, who for so long had seen nothing but the walls of his prison, had no leisure to use his eyes and enjoy the sights of the busy city and its folk. Not only that none was given him by his guide, the winged messenger, who lost not a second and ever urged him on to more breathless haste, his own temperament and feelings left him no time for gazing. Once it had been Petipre before whom it was vouchsafed him to speak in the garden, the highest in that immediate circle, and everything had depended on it. Now it was Pharaoh himself, the all-highest here below, before whom he should speak, and now even more depended on it. But what depended on it was being helpful to the Lord in his plans, not clumsily to thwart them. That would be a great folly and a disgraceful denial of the world order out of want of trust. Only a wavering faith that God meant to lift him up could be a cause for unskillfulness or poor grasp of the opportunity presented. Thus Joseph, while of course bent on the coming event so that he had no eyes for the busy, bustling streets, yet awaited it with a self-confidence devoid of fear, being strong in that faith which he knew was the basis of all devout and adroit dealing, namely, that God meant well and lovingly and momentously by him. We, as we go along with him, sharing his suspense, even though we well know how everything fell out, we shall not reproach him for self-confidence, but take him as he was and as we have long known him to be. There are some chosen ones full of doubt, humility, and self-reproach, unable to believe in their own election. They wave it away in anger and poorness of spirit, trusting not their own senses, even feeling some injury done to their unbelief when, after all, they find themselves lifted up. And there are others to whom nothing in the world is more natural than their own election, consciously favored of the gods, not at all surprised at whatever elevation and consummation come their way. Whichever group of chosen ones you prefer, the self-distrustful or the presumptuous, Joseph definitely belonged to the second. Yet let us at least be glad that he did not belong to the third, which likewise exists. Hypocrites before God and man, who behave unworthily even to themselves, and in whose mouth the grace of God conceals more arrogance than all the blessing confidence of the unabashed. Pharaoh's temporary quarters in On lay east of the Sun Temple, connected with it by an avenue of sphinxes and sycamores on which the god proceeded when he went to burn incense before his father. The dwelling house had been conjured up by a blithe, gay fancy, not built of stone, which was suitable only for eternal dwellings, but made of brick and wood like other dwellings, though of course as charmingly and gracefully conceived as only the highest culture of Kemi could dream of. Surrounded in its gardens by the protection of the blindingly white wall, in front of whose elevated entrance, on gilded flagpoles, gay pennants floated in a light breeze. It was past midday, the mealtime already over. The messenger had not rested even by night, yet it took the forenoon, too, before they reached On. There was a bustle on the square before the walled gate. Many of the citizenry of On had got up and gone thither only to stand about and wait to see the sights. Groups of police guards and charioteers barred the way, standing to chat while their steeds snorted, pawed, or even sometimes gave out a high, clear whinny. Then there were all sorts of hawkers and peddlers selling colored sweetmeats and cakes, little scarabs, and inch-high statuettes of the king and queen. Not without difficulty did the messenger and his charge make a way for themselves. "A guest! A guest! Way by the king's command!" he cried again and again, trying to frighten the people by his professional breathlessness, which he had resumed on landing. He cried out again to the servants running towards him in the inner court. They raised their eyebrows and made signs of assent, and led Joseph to the foot of a staircase. A palace official stood on the top of it, guarding the entrance to a pavilion, and looked down at them dull-eyed. He was something like an under-steward. To this man, the messenger cried up the stairs in winged words that he was bringing the soothsayer from Zawi Re, who had been sent for hither in the utmost haste.